America is a nation of immigrants, but that doesn't mean the children of those immigrants feel that they belong here. Alex Tizon didn't. In his new book, Big Little Man, Tizon explores how he felt growing up as an Asian male in a culture that puts the highest value on beefy white men. Tizon and his family moved to the U.S. from the Philippines in 1964. He says he knew he was different as soon as he arrived here.
When we arrived in the United States in 1964, there were only something like 800,000 Asians total in the whole country. And I don't know how many exactly there were in Seattle, but we didn't see a lot of other Asians. Certainly where we lived right off of Latona and 57th. That was our second house. First house was on Roosevelt Way. We didn't have any neighbors that were not white.
And so I imagine 20-year-olds listening to this conversation right now thinking, what? Because Seattle isn't that city anymore. But you mentioned popular culture also as something where you learned who was an American and who looked like you and nobody did. Popular culture at that time also didn't resemble so much the, I mean, not that popular culture is packed with diversity, but it was really different 50 years ago as well.
It was much different. We would turn on television, and television was one of our big teachers. And we would watch shows. I remember watching a movie with my mother. It was a rerun of an old movie. I believe it was a movie about Genghis Khan, and it was and the actor who starred as Genghis Khan in the movie was John Wayne. And there were shows in which characters who were supposed to be Asian were Asian in real life were played by non-Asian actors. I mean, the big one on television was this TV series Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm. David Carradine, I think, was
David Carradine, who was supposed to be this Shaolin monk from China. And, you know, he looked about as Chinese to me as Spiro Agnew. That was the line I used in the book anyway. He didn't look Chinese to me at all. But
well, so what did those images of people that you saw tell you about yourself?
At the time when I was a child, I was just absorbing all this stuff. And I think subconsciously I'm sure I was questioning why this was happening. Why weren't there real Asian people on television? And when there were real Asian people, for example, the character Hop Sing
in Bonanza,
right, which was a great popular show that I liked. When there were Asian characters on television, they were characters like Hop Sing who were houseboys. Asians were good at being houseboys. And so the combination of all of these things, first there were these Asian characters who were played by white actors, and then the Asians that actually did make it on the screen were characters that I couldn't be proud of in any way, ashamed of, actually.
So you're speaking as a young Filipino American boy. Was it different for Filipino American girls or any other kind of girls who came from Asian parents?
I believe when we first arrived, it wasn't that different. When we were young, when we were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I don't think that there was much of a difference. I think we absorbed it all the same, and we probably experienced American culture the same way. But I think as we got into adolescence, when courtship and mating and dating and the opposite sex mm-hmm. became important, I think that's when our paths begin to diverge, at least in this one area.
Why?
Well, I think that in a nutshell, it's a long, complicated answer to your question, why, which is a great question, of course. But the nutshell is, I think that Asian females, Asian women, are considered desirable, and Asian men are not.
And you write a lot about that
yeah.
in your book.
Not too much, I hope. I think it was a good chapter, wasn't it?
Well, no, it's permeating. Permeates the book, Alex.
All right.
How is it different for women as they get to the mating and dating age?
For various complex reasons, Asian women in Western culture are seen as desirable, and Asian men traditionally have been seen as undesirable. And I grew up with the ramifications of that mythology. as do a lot of Asian American men still today.
Well, so how did that manifest itself when you were, I don't know, in high school or college?
I'll tell you when it hit me really hard was when those two or three occasions when I developed a crush on an Asian girl.
An Asian girl.
An Asian girl who, I'll even mention her name. Maybe I shouldn't. But I should. Okay, her Eileen Takayama in fifth grade, who I had this immense, immense crush on. I wanted to marry her. Even then. But she wasn't interested in me. And, you know, there are lots of reasons not to be interested in me. I get that. But overall, I got the sense that she wasn't interested in Asian men or Asian boys, I should say. And that particular sentiment of not being interested in Asian men, I have found among some, maybe more than some, Asian women who live in the United States. So they, even Asian women, even the women who come from our own tribe, our own blood, reject us here in the West, and they prefer to go with other kinds of men, mostly white men.
Whereas Asian American women are seen as romantic figures for a multitude of races? I mean, they're sexier than Asian men? Is that the idea?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And I try not to use the word sexy in the book. It goes much beyond just sexy. The way Asian women were depicted in the writings of Marco Polo, for example, beginning with Marco Polo, was that there were these almost celestial figures with superhuman erotic powers, and from that, the image of this sexy being came into being.
But you also sort of are making that line between at some point in Asia itself, white men come there to find either their sexual fantasy fulfilled or their some kind of fantasy fulfilled with an Asian woman. It's okay for her to be delicate and little. Delicate and little is not a good thing
for men. And it never has been. And in most cultures throughout history, big is associated with power. And women in all sorts of cultures are drawn to power.
Hmm.
Having been conquered and colonized by the West, I think, had something to do with Asian men being viewed as small. And the fact that Asian men in certain parts of Asia, certainly southern, south and southeast Asia, were smaller. They were shorter. You couple that with the way Asian men are taught to behave, which is... I talk about this in the book. There's men in East Asia, in particular, are taught a softer kind of masculinity that it was considered highly, highly attractive and desirable mm-hmm. in the East, and still is. But that doesn't translate very well in the West. It translates as being feminine and weak.
Maybe the problem is Western culture.
Well, there are problems all around. I don't want to point any kind of blame at Western culture. I think the blame can be shared in this case.
You also were interested in the bigger notion for men in general. What is it to be a man?
Yes, that's really the second big theme of the book, and I think that's partly because my father who plays a big part in the book. I think he became lost himself in his own identity as a man when he came here. He came here in midlife, was very educated, but came here and couldn't figure out a way to fit in and to make a living.
Is that particular to Asian immigrants, or is that is that part of the wider immigrant experience?
That the men have...
That men come here and whoever they were, whatever status they had, where they were, kind of falls away.
Oh, it's definitely part of the immigrant experience. That, I mean, the whole idea of being a prince in your homeland and being a cab driver in the new land, that I think that applies to immigrants from all over. Yes. My father had to deal with the other added element of being Asian during a time when we came over, the Vietnam War was just starting. So Asian and Asian faces were associated with, at that time, the enemy. So there was that, in addition to the fact that he had no status and no way to make a living in America.
At what point did you start to tie these fascinations, your journalistic work, your clipping work, your family history, into the project that would be this book, this sort of personal look at Asian men?
Well, again, in that's a great question. And in retrospect, I look back on it and I see that I'd been working on that book really for the last 10 or 20 years. But it didn't materialize as a book idea until maybe 5 years ago. I was approaching 50. I look back on it and see all those projects that I worked on over the years as a journalist. And I see that they were all contributing to this project. I didn't know it at the time. 5 years ago, I had something in my system that was telling me I had to write a book before I died. Yeah, I guess you start thinking about death as you approach 50.
I hope not yet.
I mean,
not while you're in here.
No, not while I'm in here, and I hope not in the next 10 or 15 years. But you do start thinking about the end, and I had the sense that before I ended, I needed to get one book out of my system. I wasn't sure what that was exactly. I knew it. I knew some of the themes, but when it all came together, it was this book.
Alex Tizon's book is called Big Little Man. It's part memoir, part exploration of what it means to be an Asian man in America.